fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. 5-Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. 5-Alarm Task Force is brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. I am happy to be back with you and happy to have you with us, whether you're listening to the audio podcast or watching us on the video. We truly appreciate you being with us. It has been a few weeks since we've been here due to this malady I've been going through, but I've been feeling a little bit better and we're beginning to book more dates and more interviews to bring you more great podcasts from 5-Alarm Task Force. So we really want to thank you for being with us. My guest today is Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson from Pearland, Texas Fire Department, and we will be talking about mentoring and its importance in the fire service. Some of you listen to us on our platform with our host, Podomatic. Some of you listen on your favorite podcast platform. Some of you visit our website to listen. And after you do, if you're on our website or after you've listened to any podcast or watched any of our video casts, please feel free to come to visit our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And you'll be able to listen to the most recent podcast right from the homepage, or you can tap podcast on the main menu on across the top of the screen, and that will take you to our entire library of over 160 episodes of 5-Alarm Task Force. And while you're there, please don't forget to sign up for our newsletter right on the homepage or on the one of our About pages. And we send the newsletter out about 5-6 times during the year with information about the show, about the nonprofit foundation, what we're doing, our work, etc. And we don't send spam, and we do not sell or give away your emails. That's the most important part. We guard your emails with the same privacy we guard our own, and we do so to the best as per legal statutes. We always have to obey those, to be sure. And if you follow us on Facebook, we hope you'll like us. We're getting more and more likes every other time I'm there, basically. I mean, almost every time we're there. And we're glad to have you on Facebook, and we hope that you'll see our posts and you'll follow us on our podcast and videocast, and more importantly, you'll visit the website to help make a donation, which is going to be very important. That'll come up later on in the show. And if you do listen to us on a podcast platform, many of them allow you to leave a review, either with stars or a couple of sentences, and that's very important because the algorithm that most of those platforms use to determine where we would wind up on the results of a search for someone looking for our podcast depends on those positive reviews. So if you haven't done one already, please take just a few moments on your podcast platform and leave us a quick review. That would be great, a big help to us. And if you enjoy the podcast and you'd like to take a little piece away, well, guess what? We still haven't heard from you. We have sold out all our t-shirts and we're looking for something new to put in the shop that you will be interested in. So if you're interested, you can send an email to dalmattprod@outlook.com, or you can send a post on Twitter to 5-Alarm Task Force, or on Instagram, or on LinkedIn, or on Facebook and let us know what kind of quote-unquote swag you'd like to see in our store that you would be interested in, knowing that you'd purchase it and the net proceeds from those purchases will go to our foundation account, from which we have already given since October of 2020, and in the midst of the pandemic, we have been able to disperse $1,700 to our brothers and sisters and or their families in dire need in just these few months. But we need your help to continue, and you'll hear about that later on in the show. So we hope you enjoy the show, and remember, you can always reach us at dalmatprod@outlook.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll be right back with my guest, Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's what's coming up next month. May 1st, instructor Thomas Anderson will offer an 8-hour Max Firebox Burn and Learn thermal imaging training at the Amboy Extrication Fire Conference in Illinois. And May 1st through the 2nd, Bridgeport, West Virginia Fire Expo, instructors Andy Starnes and Joey Baxter will offer 4 2-hour sessions of the Tactical 360 Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics program. This event is sponsored and in partnership with Interstate Rescue. Remember, check the website of Insight Training or their Facebook page for confirmation of registrations and dates. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using The Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be back with you. If you're just watching the video on YouTube, thank you for joining us on YouTube. We sincerely appreciate it. Yes, we've been gone for a little while due to this malady I've been dealing with, but I'm better and we're continuing on. And I'm very happy to have you all with us. And if you're listening to the audio, glad to have you back as well. And my guest today is Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson. And I want to read his bio. For a person with the rank of Battalion Chief, you'd expect this real long, inverted, convoluted bio of all this stuff. His bio is so short and sweet, but it tells you so much. So the chief got into the Katy Fire Department in Texas on June 9th, 2000, when he was 15 years old. He was a junior member of the department and was basically a glorified water boy for all the firefighters who were on the scene of a fire. But I think we all know what that's been like for most of us when we started. But I was able to, he was able to train with them and every week and ride the apparatus when there was an open seat. Throughout the years, he moved up in the ranks and he changed the departments in 2007. He was one of the original full-time members ever hired by the Pearland, Texas Fire Department, where he currently sits today as a proud member of the B shift as a battalion chief. He has taught at numerous schools around Texas and has started recently traveling to teach his mentoring class over the last year. He's taught for FD Tactics, Bearers of the Oath. We just talked about our good friend Jason Liska and the podcast you did with him last week, and also Herb Tyler with National Fire Rescue, and numerous other departments across the state and nation. He is first a husband and a father to a beautiful family back home, his wife Lauren and son Luke. He enjoys hunting and playing golf on his days off. If you can't find him there, he'll be in his office at home, enjoying a book, a magazine, or a podcast with a glass of Jameson in hand.
Yes, sir.
Fire service is his passion, but mentoring and seeing others succeed is what drives his soul and defines his mission. Chief, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hey, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate the invite, man.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm glad we were able to connect on social media, and we kind of talked about the same things, and now just before we came on air, we realized how many people that we know together,
yeah.
And I think that's one of the beauties of the fire service, that you can be in three different parts of the country, and yet you all have mutual friends in those areas.
Absolutely. It's really funny. You know, you go to one conference, you gain a bunch of new brothers, and then before you know it, you thought you walked away with just three or four and you're interconnected and you end up knowing 15 or 20 different brothers and sisters. And it's, I just absolutely love the fire service.
I do. I know what you're saying. And I'll tell you something. I think every guest that I've had lucky enough to have in this podcast who's been in the fire service has almost always echoed those same feelings.
Yes,
we are a family. And again, we're not just a family in the U.S. We're family to our brothers and sisters across the world as well. We hurt when they hurt, they hurt when we hurt. That's one of the reasons why we put with our mutual friends, Andy Starnes and Nick Higgins, we put together this nonprofit Fire Alarm Task Force Corp to reach out and help our brothers and sisters in dire need. And folks, just a quick plug. We do need your help. Since October, we've handed out just over $1,700 to small volunteer fire departments and firefighters or their families in dire need. Many of you know that we've had some recent losses in the past 4 to 6 weeks, and we have reached out to those families with significant contributions only thanks to you. And so please visit our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And at the top menu, you'll see the word donate. It'll be on other pages too. But when you see that picture of the queue, the federal queue, well, you just click on that and that'll take you to our donation page. And any amount will be helpful to us. So we really appreciate that. So Chief, you and I talked just before we started again about this passion that we both share, because your passion really in the fire service, besides being a leader as a chief, is mentoring. I've been a lifelong educator since I was 13 years old. I started teaching, kind of teaching my fellow classmates. I was invited and getting paid $1 an hour back then, which to a 13-year-old kid was a fortune.
Oh, yeah.
Had another dollar a week for allowance, and I was making $2 a week. I was in a rock band way back then, and that was a lot of money. Yet I've always loved teaching. That's one of the reasons why I've done this podcast, is to bring other teachers to share with this. I still teach privately here at home, separate from the fire service, because it's my passion. It's what I love to do.
Yes,
and
sir.
Let's talk about what brought you to, as you grew up. I mean, you're very young for a battalion chief. You know,
I am. I'm very young. Probably shouldn't be one.
As a matter of fact. But I think you're very lucky. And I think it happened because of who you became. that you chose to become. You chose to follow a path to bring you to leadership when you start way back when you started when you were 15. So let's talk about that path.
Sure. So, you know, I mean, I think the path started when I was young. You know, my dad was working for Shell Oil and we had to move states. You know, I'm originally from Louisiana, so we had to move over to Texas. And from there, I kind of had to take my little brother under my wing and say, hey, you know, we're going to get through this together. Here's how we're going to go to school. Here's how you get on the school bus, you know, and just kind of mentoring him. Right. Sure. And when I teach my class, that's what I say. Like, I've been in the fire department since 2000, but I've been mentoring since 1989 when my brother was born. So we did that. And I think where it really took off for me was when I got into high school and I got into Future Farmers of America, FFA, because that instilled a lot of leadership in me. It forced me to learn leadership at different levels, from being an officer for that chapter to being on leadership teams and going to competitions. It sent me to Washington, D.C. for a week for a leadership conference. So I think all of that combined started me on my path. When I got into the fire service, I had a lot of what we call old heads, right, sitting around the kitchen table. And they took me under their wing and they showed me. And they would call me on Saturdays, hey, kid, what are you doing? And I'd say, well, I'm not doing anything. Okay, come to the fire station. We're going to train. And they would train me and train and train until I couldn't see straight. And I always took that and I said, okay, this is something that I'm going to have to do one day, partly because I felt it in my heart, but the other part because they were telling me, like, what I do with you today, make sure you pass that on to the guys that come in after you. Make sure you take them under your wing. Make sure you teach them, right? And so I really took that to heart. And when we got to Pearland, you know, in 2007, there was only 18 full-timers, and that was us. Well, today we sit at 148 with 180 in the fire department total. So you want to talk about some rapid growth and you want to talk about having to step up into some leadership roles and mentor. We have really been thrown into it. And I think that is what really solidified my love for it was I have to do this for the success of the department and for the citizens of Pearland. And if I don't do this, then someone's going to suffer and I can't allow that to happen.
Where in Texas is Pearland located?
We share borders with Houston. We share the southern border of Houston, so we match up to each other.
And is it a combo department, all career?
It's all career. When in 07, we were combo. We still had some volunteers. And now currently, it's just all career members. And we sit about 35, 40 miles from the coast.
Wow. So it's really a challenge. You have that southern area south of Houston. You're right on the coast.
Yes,
so Hurricane Alley, like we are here.
Yes,
lucked out last year. You know, we were very, very lucky last year. As big a year as it was and all the prep we did. And luckily, none of the ladies decided to visit us.
That's right.
Guys, we were very lucky on that time. But, you know, you mentioned how you you started mentoring with your younger brother.
Yes, sir.
And I have an older brother who's 5 years older and I have one who's 2.5 years younger. And my older brother did that as well. My dad worked full time and my mom decided that she wanted to go back to work and she started her own business first in the house. And then she was able to get a storefront and then a bigger storefront. And so while he was in the house going through high school, he was our mentor. He kind of took us under the wing like you did with your brother. And I think, you know, I appreciated him more today. I appreciate him more today for what he did then than I did when I was a kid. And
I bet so.
He was 12 and I was 7 years old and he was bossing me around. But I learned from him. And I tried to do the same thing with my younger brother. And thank God he turned out to be a terrific, not only young man, but adult man as well, very successful in his career. And it's funny when you talked about what they did with you for training at Katy is because when I accidentally wound up joining this volunteer department in North Carolina and met the guy who's my best friend, still my best friend today, he had come down there to supposedly be at a college there, but turned out that he didn't even want to do that. He's found the fire service. He had already came from Washington, D.C. He had already worked with Bethesda Chevy Chase Rescue and he got interested there, and I did. And we didn't have any kids then, and my wife worked as well. So on lunch hours and weekends when she was teaching or something like that, I would go down there. And we had two of the paid guys. We were a volunteer department, but they had three what we called caretakers. 24 yes, on, 48 off. Their job was to make sure to get the first apparatus out with whoever showed up. Daytime, there was a paid captain. There was a paid mechanic. And so they could usually get the first piece out, maybe with one volunteer, but everything else took us. And two of those caretakers really took us under their wing because they saw how anxious we were to learn. And I think I was very lucky in a special way because I grew up in suburban Boston, never really having to do much with my hands. I know how to use basic tools, hammers, screwdrivers, regular saw, stuff like that.
Sure.
I didn't know anything about cars other than filling up the gas tank at the local gas station, leaving the tab for my dad to pay. But at the firehouse, these guys, especially one of them, our good friend Roger, really did. He didn't just teach us about the fire service and the apparatus and the tools and the compartments. He gave us life lessons as well. And we were very lucky that the chief sent us the North Carolina State Fire Colleges. And had Rich and I been around for the fourth one, he was going to send us there. And as I told you before we started, that it wasn't until 2017, a long time later, since I left North Carolina in 81, that he asked me, I went to visit the chief. He was still around, thank God. And he said, did you ever wonder why I sent you three jokers to that fire college? And I said, well, I don't know about Roger. He qualified, but I don't know about Rich and me. Why'd you send us? He says, because I saw you boys as leadership material. You were going to be officers in this company.
There you go.
And he said, I'm just sorry that you boys left because I knew where you were going to go. And I brought tears to my eyes to have him say that because we had no idea. We had talked about it. You know, we talk about like once every other week. As I mentioned, just came down on Sunday to visit. And it meant a lot to both of us to hear that from our chief. From that time.
Yeah.
So I think that the mentoring that you're doing, I've seen that benefit of somebody who really cares about a new recruit and wants to take him or her in under their wing and say, listen, this is not an easy job, but it's a job you can do as long as your heart's in it.
That's right. Exactly it. That's exactly it. And that's the whole goal, right? Is, you know, like you were saying, you got disabled and had to leave the job early. And you know, I don't have much longer in it, maybe another 20 years. And you know, a lot of kids think, man, 20 years is a long time, but it really isn't, you know, and it flies by. I mean, if I think about now versus when I walked into the Katy Volunteer Fire Department, I mean, I can't believe it's been that long ago. And when I see some of the older members, they're like, hey, how long have you been in? And I said, well, guys, I walked into y'all station 20 years ago. Oh my God. You know, it's like, they can't believe it. So it's really not that long. And for a lifespan, you only have a very short segment of it that you can truly make a difference. And that's our purpose as firemen. That's our job. That's our oath. That's what we're supposed to do.
Right.
Is we have to come to work every day to change lives, whether it's the lives of the rookies, whether it's the lives of the citizens, maybe even it's our own through conversations at the kitchen table. But we only have that short segment to make a difference and to make an impact. And we've got to take advantage of that. And for me personally, I think the biggest impact that you can make as a company officer is with that rookie and how you train them and how you get them up to where they want to be so you can put them down a successful path.
That's true. And sometimes it doesn't even, sometimes initially it can be even the senior firefighter in the house. He or she may not even be an officer, but they have that desire that you're talking about. They
That's
want
right.
to take that new recruit and guide them. You know, no, for us, nobody assigned these two day caretakers to train us. They took us under their wing on their own.
You
know, we went to regular training, you know, every week, 3 weeks a month, and the rest, second, fourth one was the business meeting. But these guys were there for us. Every time we came down, they made sure you know how to get this? Where is this tool located? Tell me now. Go get it. Bring it out. Can you use it? Can you set it up? Things like that. That's even though they were running us ragged, we both kind of realized after the fact that they weren't running us ragged as because we're probies because we didn't have a standing in probies as a volunteers, but they were running us ragged to help us learn and to teach us. And so we could be better firefighters and start riding that apparatus, because you couldn't ride the apparatus unless you know that you knew that apparatus cold.
Exactly. And you know, and you brought up a great point, because the senior person in the station is one of the most underrated people in the fire service today.
Absolutely.
A lot of people think that when they get a trumpet on their collar, that they have to be the ones that teach and they have to be the ones that lead. And that's not the case. Those senior people in the station are almost more important than the officer themselves when it comes to lining that crew out and getting that crew set straight and teaching. You know, for me, if a guy comes to me or a girl comes to me as the chief or even as a company officer and says, hey, my career path is this, being a fireman. Okay, cool. Never want to promote. I love it. But what I'm going to require out of you, what I'm going to ask you, is that you be the best firefighter that we have in this fire department, and understand that I'm going to send every rookie to you for you to train and mentor. And you need to train and mentor them in a way that if they want to become an officer or a driver or a chief, if they want to go above you and maybe one day become your boss, it's your job to set them on that path. And when you have those type of conversations, and I've seen that where those senior people really step up, and being a company officer myself and now being a shift commander, I can tell you that when I was a senior man, I think I had a bigger impact on the rookies than I did as a company officer, as a chief. I think now they appreciate the time of an officer, and they appreciate and value the words of an officer, but they will never have the impact that senior person in the station has on them, because they're looking at somebody that's their rank, that is respected by an officer, to lead them down their path. It's a very vital asset to a crew.
It is, without a doubt. And I believe that if we want to continue to grow our fire service, and I did an article that was published on firehouse.com about growing leadership. And my theory is simply this. If you're an educator, if you're a teacher, you're a mentor, that's how part of you define yourself. You see somebody who seems to show a little bit of that leadership. We plant the seed, just like we would if we're going to grow veggies outside. We plant the seed and we take care of it, water it, make sure it gets some sunlight. And we wait for that first sprout. And then when that first sprout does, we have a big smile on our face.
That's it.
We're growing now our third pineapple out of the same plant in our pool deck, the third pineapple in 3 years.
Wow.
But it took 3 years for the plant to bear its first fruit after it was put in a big pot, you know, lots of sunshine, lots of moisture and stuff like that. And people on some of the garden websites said, oh, well, after one, it's going to die, so you'll never get another one. We said, okay, so it dies, but at least we have one. Well, we're on our third. We're on our third. And so if we take care of that little seed as it sprouts and guide it, make sure it has the sunlight and enough water and maybe some nutrients, that sprout will grow into a full-grown vegetable that you're trying to plant.
Absolutely.
And we can do the same thing with leadership. We can spot, if you're a good leader or a mentor, you'll spot that person who has that extra little shine on his or her face, on their head. You just see the way they carry themselves, how they listen, and you say, ah, that's one. That's yep. one we're gonna work with.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the perfect analogy, right? Planting the seed, caring it, guiding it, directing it. Because, you know, especially in today's times, a lot of people want to sit here and blame the generation. They want to blame this, and they always want to have an excuse, you know? And I have expectations as a chief. Like, when we're on a house fire, we're going to find a reason to go in, not an excuse to stay out. And so my challenge back is, if that's the attitude that we all have, whether it's social media, whether it's in the firehouse, whether it's in a magazine article about we're here for them, we're going after them, we're searching every job, we're doing all this, and all of that is facts, all of that is truth. Why aren't we doing that with mentoring? Why are we always finding the excuse, right, to not mentor? Why are we always finding the excuse to stay on the couch and watch football rather than go on the drill floor? Why are we finding the excuse, you know, of these kids are stupid, they're millennials, they're this, they're that? It's not acceptable. And it's leading to, like, I mean, everything that I'm starting to do now, and I'm working on a new article about mediocrity it's the pandemic of the fire service right now. This term of that's good enough is not. It doesn't work.
Right.
And when I was a rookie and when you were a rookie and anybody else that came up that is now a senior member of their department, those terms weren't used for you. You know, did they think that we were stupid? Probably. But they trained us and they drilled us and they never found an excuse to not. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to get back to. We have to take that seed and we have to put it in a pot and we have to guide it and grow it and water it and feed it and get it to produce fruit. And I mean, that's an excellent analogy that you use. Completely agree with that. I mean, because it's really hampering our excuses are starting to hamper the way that these rookies come up in today's world.
Oh, absolutely.
They're hitting the station, not knowing what screwdrivers are, not knowing how to work with their hands or to cook or to mow grass or to even fold clothes. So yeah, I know that it's not your fault that they don't have those skills, but it is your problem and you got to fix that problem.
Right.
So if you got to take half the shift and teach them how to do just basic life skills, teach that and then teach them to be a fireman. Because in my experience, if they can't conquer the basic life skills of everyday living, it's going to be a very difficult path for them to become a good fireman because they're not going to have that critical thinking. They're not going to have that ability to think outside the box and to be able to adapt what little fine life skills they have to the very critical skills that we have on a fire ground.
Very true. Very true. You know, and you know, over the last couple of years where we've seen on social media, a lot of this cantankerous debate about this generation or that generation. And one of the things that I finally got kind of sick and tired of it. And I said, you know, if you condemn a generation just because of when they were born, then you're going against everything that every generation of firefighter before us dealt with.
That's right.
Not every firefighter came from a family of four or five generations of firefighters. You know, I only got to serve 8 years, but there was no firefighting background in my family.
Right.
My dad worked for a big supermarket chain in New England. My mom worked her own place. And I admired from the very first time I met when I was a firefighter in my town when I was 7 years old, because we had a little brush fire in our woods. And I went out to the pumper and he gave me a lollipop and showed me around. And I just loved him. But I had no desire to be a firefighter. I had no idea that life would later take me down a path that would lead me to do that. And today, even though it was only 8 years, I still define myself as a firefighter.
Absolutely.
It's who I am.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that I said on some of those posts is that, you know, some of these kids who you're condemning didn't go into the fire service. They went into our military. And those, guess who's flying all our drones across the Middle East?
Right.
Those kids. Why?
Those kids.
Because they didn't know how to learn. They did not learn how to use a hammer or a screwdriver or a drill or a saw, but they played video games and they have eye-hand coordination. And that's why when they joined the military, they put them through those schools. They saw what the ability those kids had, what the talents they did have, they came with. And yeah, sure, they got trained. They went through basic training and everything else, but they also saw the ability they had with that eye-hand coordination. And those kids are flying our missiles, flying our drones today. So
right.
to castigate an entire generation just because of when they were born and they're different from the way it was when I was born, when you were born, et cetera, is wrong.
Yes, because exactly.
If we look back at the heritage of our wonderful fire service in this country for the past, well, I'm going on 40 plus years. So let's say nearly 50 years, we'll see that many firefighters, both career, volunteer, part pay, whatever, all came from nothing to do with the fire service.
That's right.
They chose to join the fire service.
They did.
Out of the goodness of their heart.
They did. And you brought up two good points that I want to try to make here is if you don't think as a human being that every generation had people that were considered disappointing or considered wrong or considered incapable, then you're just a very closed-minded person. Our job as mentors and our job as leaders and our job as just firemen is to take those kids that don't have that generation, that don't have that experience. I'm a first generation firefighter. My entire family is either teachers, blue collar jobs as far as owning air conditioning businesses or whatnot, barbers and counselors. So I come from a country town and I'm a first generation fireman. It's somebody's job to make sure that I leave the legacy behind that if my son wants to become a fireman, he has a second generation that he's going to be proud to carry on. And that's our job, right? So when those kids hit your stations these days and they say, hey, I'm the first fireman in my family, it's even more important that you drive home the importance of being the first fireman in your family and what it's going to mean 4, 5, 6 generations down the road for them to carry that last name on their coat. The second point that you were saying about the military, right? Let's talk about the military. So these kids go to basic training, right? And they get beat up on, destroyed. And I don't mean physically, I just mean they get broke down.
Sure.
Right? Because the military wants to break them down and then build them up to be whatever it is, whether they're in the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, and they want to make that person a Marine. They want to make that person a soldier. They want to make that person a seaman, right? So on and so forth. But then after basic, where do they go? They go to MOS school to learn and to be mentored on their job assignment,
right?
Whether it's EOD, whether it's, you know, infantrymen, whether it's flying drones, right? So why are we in the fire service getting these kids fresh out of fire school where they have been broke down and built back up and then putting them in their MOS training at a fire station as a part of their job, getting a paycheck and still treating them like they're in fire school, right? They're not learning that way. Your job is to teach them the craft. The difference between us and the military is we have 20 plus years to teach them and we have to continuously teach them, where the military only has a certain amount of weeks and then they got to go on and do that job and continue learning when they're on the job. So we have to treat fire school as basic training and the fire station as MOS, and we can't treat them the same. We have to treat them separate and understand that in MOS, it is our job to teach them the job so they become good at it so they can function and perform on their own. And if we have that mindset going into it, I think we're way more successful in the world of mentoring than we think is even possible.
I think you're right. That's a great point. You know, in that Department of North Carolina, the only time that we were treated as probies was the night we were voted in. There were 5 of us voted in that night. And when the meeting broke, the chief and the captain came and shook our hands and then invited, and one of the caretakers invited us out to the bay. He says, since you guys are now members and you'll start your training, we want to show you the most important part of a pumper, and that's going to be the impeller. So we want you guys to crowd around here. Took us on the right side of the new engine we had just received. And he says, I'm going to take this cap off, and I want you guys getting real close. And when I open the valve, I want you to look inside, and you're going to see that wheel with the holes in it. That's the impeller. It's going to drive the water in the pump. And we all got crouched in like that. And he says, you're all ready? And we said, yeah. So he opens it up. Of course, 50 gallons of water comes out and, you know, soaks us. And everybody's sputtering. And then I start laughing. Because what are you laughing at? I said, and then they all start laughing. And that was it. That was the one haze.
Right.
Every time we were at the station after that, we got to learn. Whether we came on our own time, it was a drill night, whatever. Every time after that, these two other guys, if it was they were on shift, they would help teach us something. Yep. Something. If it was 10 minutes, if I was there for lunch hour, they would take 45 minutes, let me 15 minutes to eat the sandwich, and then 45 minutes of learning something else with them. And I loved it. I had heard about rookies and probies and stuff like that. And I had no idea if this department was going to do anything like that. And after the impeller thing, it never was again. I mean, there were times that within the first 4 months, there was 2 times where either my buddy or I, since we made so many calls, an officer didn't show up on a night call. They pulled mm-hmm. one of us up onto the officer's seat. They said, come on, right up front, we got to get going. And I remember the first time he asked me, I said, I don't think I belong here. He goes, you belong here right now. I need you up here as the officer. I'll help you with it. So let's get going. And we pulled out. My buddy was in the back, or was vice versa. That's the way we learned.
Yes.
You know, and we grew and we still, he was here Sunday. We went out for lunch. And we talked about some of our best calls, some of our worst calls, but the times we spent together and we grew together.
Right.
And that's what I think is most important, that a firefighter can look back and he or she can see, what have I learned and who was there to teach me? Who can I count on? I mean, my friend Roger, every time I'm back in North Carolina, we're always out. We always go out to dinner with him and his wife. We're close friends. And it's just that bond that,
right,
that he came to us to help us. And that was it. The bond was there for eternal friendship. And
yes.
I think, you know, that's, we have to, as you just said, we have to stop ragging on those who come after us. And because you know what's going to happen. We rag too much and people are going to say, why? I've heard bad stories about that department. Why should I join? They're going to look for something else.
That's right.
They may want to be a firefighter for several years already. But if they hear bad stories coming out of that station, you know, we did a podcast way back when with Chief Anthony Correa, a great leader in fire and EMS. And we were doing the show on volunteer departments. And we said, we'll talk about recruitment and retention. And he was the one who said, Steve, it's got to be retention and recruitment. Because if you can't keep the people you have, how the hell are you going to get anybody new to come in and join?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And I mean, it. Everything that you're speaking, man, is my language. I mean, I love it because you're exactly right. You know, they want to dunk a little bucket of water on you. They want to put you. Yes, that's all part of earning your spot. But, you know, I think what we're leaning to is that we've become to where we want to build this culture of being a jerk, rather than being a brother or a sister. You know, when I got, you could call it hazed, but when I was young in the fire service, when they would do things like that to me, one of the guys would always come up and hug my neck and say, hey, thanks for taking it in stride, kid. You know, and it made you feel special. It made you feel like, okay, that's supposed to happen and they still love me. You know, so then when it happened the next time, I learned to laugh it off. And then I learned to laugh it off. And then it got to where I was doing it back to them. You know, and I would hug their neck and say, thanks for taking the stride, kid, you know, coming from the kid. And it really formed a bond that's inseparable. But I think because it hasn't been happening, which it doesn't need to start, but a lot of these senior men and women have never had that treatment. They just hear about it and they think like, oh, I got to do it. And it's starting to build this culture of just being a jerk because they don't know how to turn around and say, hey, kid, I'm proud of you. Thanks for taking it in stride. Or, hey, kids, you did really good today. That's your celebration. Or, you know, they don't know how to build them up. They just want to be mean, just to be mean. And we got to stop that culture.
We do. And I'll tell you something. I got another story from there. When I suffered from acrophobia, fear of heights, since I was 5 years old. When my uncle put me on a big roller coaster. I didn't want to go and I was petrified. And so I got in the fire department there in North Carolina. And we had a 75-foot snorkel. Came the training night. The chief warned me. The week before, he says, next week, you're going to have to climb that ladder. And I said, I don't know if I can do it, chief. He goes, oh, I'll at least make a try. I said, okay, I'll make a try. So came out that night for training, had it set up, gave me my belt, put the belt in, locked in on the rail, slowly but surely climbed up to the top. And when I got to the top, pushed the intercom button. I'm here, chief, I'm here. And they said, good job, Steve. We're real proud of you. I said, thank you, sir. And then he told the operator to start turning the table. Turning the turntable and then start lowering and raising the ladder. And I said, Chief, if you keep doing that, I'm going to be puking on somebody. And he said, stay with it, Steve. So I did. They did it for about 2 or 3 minutes. Stop. Let me come down. And he came over and gave me a hug and a big handshake. He says, you're the man. He says, I know you had the fear of heights, but you were up there like a champ, like any other firefighter. He goes, I'm really proud of you, son. I want to tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove home that night with a grin this big on my face.
It meant the world to you.
You know?
And what year was that?
That was 77.
77. You're still talking about it in 21.
Oh, yeah.
That's the impact that we got to make on these kids.
Yep.
Right? My first rookie in Pearland was in 2009, and he's now a lieutenant. He used to be my driver, and he was my ride-up lieutenant, and I've been a very proud part of his career path. But I want to know, like, one day he's going to go back and say, yeah, man, I remember when Jacob was teaching me in 2009 and he did this or he did this. I would love to know if there were some special things like that mean to him that'll still last, you know. And I mean, golly, what's that, 45 years now?
Yeah.
You know, and you're still talking about it. So, I mean, I hope that's the kind of impact that we need to make, you know, as senior men and women and as officers and as chiefs. you want to make that everlasting impact on a kid that 45 years later, they're still talking about it.
That's great. I think I couldn't agree with you more. That's what we need to do. A little culture change for the,
that's right,
and for the positive.
That's right.
All right. So I think this will be a great place for a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk, I want to talk about your class, the class that you teach.
Sure.
And glad to see that you're doing it around the country. You have great people that you're already working with for, and we want to hear more about that. So folks, if you're watching the video, you really won't see anything different. If you're listening to the audio, we'll be right back right after these words with my guest, Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson, right after this. Please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
The physical and mental demands of a firefighter place major stress on our minds and body, and especially our heart. Far too many of our brothers and sisters in the fire and emergency service are lost each year due to cardiac arrest. In fact, statistics show that those of us active in this profession are much more susceptible to cardiac arrest than the general population. Too often, ignoring the warning signs is a fatal decision. Your body will definitely be signaling to you that something is wrong, a feeling that you have never had before. If you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell. Seek medical attention immediately. If someone under your command or in your unit is not feeling well, don't send them home. Don't send them to the bunk hall. Insist they get checked immediately. Let's change the culture in our profession, in our departments, of ignoring the warning signs our bodies are telling us. Visit IAFC.org to learn how.
This message is brought to you by the International Association of Fire Chiefs and this podcaster.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy, I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
And welcome back to this episode of Five Alum Task Force with my special guest, Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson, who is, besides being a brother firefighter, he is a brother educator. He is dedicated to being teaching, mentoring in the fire service, how important it is, and being a mentor himself. And if you heard the first portion, you heard that he closed with talking about another firefighter who's now a lieutenant, who he mentored from the time basically he came in, and he sees how he has grown into the line officer that he is today, and that's due to that mentoring. So, Chief, let's talk about this class that you teach. You're starting to teach around the country. You've taught for FD Tactics. You've taught for Bearers of the Oath, other departments in the country and in the state of Texas. So let's talk about your class and what it's about and how you run it, please.
Sure. So. It's a class I call Mentoring the Young. It was developed basically to help senior men and women or officers be able to mentor this new generation that's coming into the fire service. And it's not because I think they're pieces of junk at all. It's mainly because I am tired of hearing those kids aren't worth my time. Those kids are this. They're not smart. They can't. They're not going to learn that they need to leave the fire service. I don't agree with that at all. And so what I did is I started thinking about my own leadership failures and what I had to do in order to overcome them to become the officer that I wanted to be. And I came back to one rookie of mine from 2013 that I just completely failed as an officer. And what I found out this past weekend at a peer support conference, a little side note there, because I'm on the peer support team for our fire department, is that this kid became a moral wound for me. And that moral wound is what drives my class. So this kid came to me and I guess you could say gained a little bit of arrogance rather than competence. And I had a couple of successful rookies under my belt. And I said, hey, you know what? I know how to do this. I'm going to help this kid. I'm going to get him straight. And long story short, he just wasn't getting it. And he came to me one day and said, hey, I'm still having trouble handling the hose. What do I need to do? And believe it or not, I told him, I said, well, you need to gain weight. And that was it. And he took it so serious. And I didn't realize this then, right? It took a few years for it to sink in. But he took that advice so serious that he actually went get weight gainer powder and started drinking weight gainer powder every day at work. It actually made him sick and he actually ended up losing weight. I told him, so, man, I've taught you everything that you know, that I don't understand why you're not getting this. I've done my part, you know, sorry about your luck. And he ended up getting transferred to another shift. Well, probably about 6-8 months later, I start hearing that he's having some issues and he's having some problems and that he's probably going to lose his job. And I said, I figured that was coming. Well, there was one day, and it's a day that changed my life. And I got a phone call from this individual and he said, hey, LT, he said, I've been told that I'm probably going to lose my job, but that I have to write a performance improvement plan. Based on how I write this plan, if they accept it, I keep my job. If they don't, then I lose my job. And these words right here, they still hit my heart today. He said, you're the best officer I've ever had. Can you help me write my performance improvement plan? And my stomach sank. Because it was at that moment that I knew that, man, I was not what this kid needed at all. I was not the officer that I wanted to be and that I thought that I was. But yet he still looked up to me no matter what I didn't teach him. He still thought I was good. And now he wants me to help him save his job. And so I did. I helped him, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to write it. And he ended up losing his job. Mm. And that was in 2014. I still talk to that kid today. I talk to him every week. He's currently in Okinawa serving in the Army where he's an E6. And he's been very successful, but he's not been successful because of Jacob Johnson. He's been successful because of himself. And so when he ended up losing his job, I said, I've got to make a massive change. I messed up somewhere and I've got to figure it out. And so I came up with a process and it was called For Love of the Job, right? How do I teach the love of the job? And I had to dig deep and I had to go all the way back to when I was a rookie and those old heads took me from the kitchen table where we called me on Saturdays. And I said, how do I do this? And so I came up with a little 5-step process. You got to make them proud. You got to ask about their life. You got to ask them how they learn. You have to love them. And then you have to do your damn job. And that's one thing that I've been coined for is that term of do your damn job. And so I started taking notes and I still have those notes today. Every rookie since this individual left the organization. And I would make notes about each rookie and then what I needed to do to make them proud and how do I love them and how do I get to know their life and how do they learn? And what I finally started realizing was I can't teach if I don't know how they're going to learn. If I'm not teaching, if I'm not throwing down information the way that they're going to pick it up, then I'm failing them. So I need to figure out how they can best pick it up. if I don't know their life, I can't impact them. And my job as a leader, my job as a mentor is to impact, to have that impact that's everlasting. Like we just talked in the last segment with, you know, a mentor of yours that impacted you 40, 44, 45 years ago. You're still talking about it today. How do I have that impact? If I don't make them proud to be a Pearland fireman, then I won't succeed in anything else. But most importantly, we all say and scream brotherhood, sisterhood, but I have to act it. I have to be it. I have to love them. And so I started thinking about everything that I did in this process for this rookie and how I had the senior man teach this one. And I had my driver instill our culture and I had different parts and how much of a team effort it really took to raise a rookie. And I said, well, they always say it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes a village to raise a rookie in the fire department. And from there, I developed a class called Mentoring the Young, and I go around and teach that. And it's basically, this is me being vulnerable, right? Having some humility, being humbled and realizing that Jacob Johnson made a major mistake in his career that changed his life and changed the career of one of his members. And he vowed to never do it again. And here's how I learned from it. And I hope to teach you so you don't make the same mistakes that I made. And here's my process and everything about it. It's not the only process to mentor people. It's not the best process out there, but it's what works for me. And in that class, I provide two case studies of how I went through the process with these two individuals as rookies and how their success stories today. It's about a 3-hour class, man. We have a lot of interaction with it. We have a lot of fun with it, but then there's a lot of truth to it of, hey, if you see these signs and symptoms in yourself, then this is where you're going to be headed. And I know that because I've been there.
Well, the fact that you even mention publicly self-criticism is a big step, because you and I both know that there is usually a dearth of firefighters who will ever admit that they made missteps, that they would fess up to something, whether it was leadership or something else.
Right.
And I think that's so important in being a teacher. You can't teach if you don't know the subject. If you're a science whiz, that doesn't mean you can teach an English class.
Right.
And if you're a great athlete, that doesn't mean you're going to pass your math class.
That's right.
You have to know what it takes for you, or what it took for you to get where you are. People, I do a lot of, not as much now, but still do some computer consulting for small businesses and consumers looking for computers, what computer to buy. I help them with malware, viruses, stuff like that. And people say, oh my God, how many years did you go to computer school? Never. When I started in college, there was only, we didn't have personal computers.
Right. Well,
you know, we'd have these big giant IBMs in a room, and you had a little keyboard to work with. And all you had was a dash and dot or something like that to do. You couldn't write your papers on it or anything like that. We had to type them. I think that looking back over the 40 plus years since I was a firefighter, and what I've seen in the development of the fire service, I would say I'm proud of 90, 92% of it.
No, absolutely.
You know, but I think there's that room for growth that you've talked, that we've talked about, and you mentioned in your class. And again, I think for you to be so humble that you use your own mistake as the basis to say, this is how I grew and learned, because I didn't just go from being first year firefighter to battalion chief because I was just a nice guy. I had to do stuff. And not everything worked out well. And I think a lot of our teachers today, no matter what they teach, are afraid to admit to their own weaknesses.
Sure.
But you know, weaknesses are what make us stronger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, man, I think you bring up a great point, Steve, with looking back, right? Looking back to not having computers, looking back. If we go back to the fire department, everything has always improved in the fire department. I mean, our air packs have improved, our gear has improved, our hose, our nozzles, our fire trucks, everything has been improving. I tell the guys at the fire station all the time, if you can take something in the fire service and reinvent it, you'll become a millionaire. You know, Flathead X, how many times has that been reinvented? Millionaires, right? But the thing that that frustrates me is, as all of our equipment, tools, and necessities that we need to be good firemen are improving, our mentoring and our leadership and our teachings are not improving. And that's the most important aspects of the job that should be. If you want to be a good leader, if you want to be a respected leader, you have to be vulnerable. And I had to learn that the hard way. I had to swallow a big pill of humility and vulnerability and self-actualization of, I wasn't who I thought I was at all. I was an arrogant piece of junk. And that, when you're able to do that as a leader, then you're really going to hit a whole nother scope of I don't even know how to really describe it, but a whole nother scope of just self-realization of what you could be and who you really want to be. I've said it before and I talk about it a lot, is that vulnerability and humility and humbleness are the most underrated aspects of leadership in today's job. And if you're out there as a company officer, even as a senior man or woman on the job or a battalion chief, take a long, hard look at yourself and ask yourself, am I vulnerable? Am I humbled? Do I have humility? Because if you do, then you're headed down the right path. But if you can't look at yourself and say, I made these mistakes, then there's some issues that we need to work out. Because you're right, I didn't go from first year firefighter to battalion chief without a long, bumpy road. It's been a long, bumpy road.
Sure.
And I am a young chief. I probably shouldn't be a chief. But I think the reason that I'm able to be comfortable being a younger chief is because I am vulnerable and I can say, hey, I still need to learn. I still need to be mentored. I need to go talk to these other chiefs that have been chiefs for a while and ask questions and get advice so I can continue to grow myself so I don't make a mistake like I did in 2013 again, because I refuse to do that.
Right. And that's so important to learn from our mistakes. We all make them. And that's why the good Lord gave us erasers on pencils.
That's right.
Because we make mistakes, but the point is to correct them. That's right. What we do with that eraser. We erase something we put down that we believe is wrong, and we write something down that we believe is right. We need to do that with our lives as well in our professions.
Yes.
We have to be willing to look, you know, as my late dad taught, he says, if you can look in the mirror, that guy in the mirror never lies to you. That guy knows every secret that you've hidden deep in your heart. So when you say, did I do my best on this? Ask the guy in the mirror and he or she will answer you. You may not like the answer, but you will get the real answer. And, you know, that's something that you've talked about in what you did in your own self-evaluation is you said, hey, I really messed up. How do I make it better? Not just for him, but how do I be a better person? You know, all too often, a little gold on a collar goes too far.
Absolutely. Way too far.
Yeah. Especially if you're in a volunteer department that elects officers.
Yeah. Popularity votes, right?
Popularity vote. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I sometimes I've harped on this, but when I moved from North Carolina up to New York State and joined a department up there, I already was certified by the state of North Carolina in basic firemanship, hydraulics and pumping and high level rescue. When I joined the department in New York State, also a small combo department, I had to get permission just to drive the utility truck.
Wow.
I couldn't be elected. I was nominated for an officer. I couldn't get an officership. The only thing I was elected to was the board of directors to be financial secretary, because I helped them with their first fundraising project. They'd never done one. And I took from my experience working in nonprofits, went to a conference, came up with an idea for a mailing campaign that they had never tried. And first year they raised $17,000.
Yeah.
So that got me on the board, but I wanted to be an officer.
Yeah.
But I couldn't even become a driver.
Mm-hmm.
It just was a close click. Everybody was elected based on popularity. And I was a family man then. I had two kids already, two young kids. I went to meetings as often as I could, training and the business meeting, but I couldn't be at every single one, but I made a lot of calls. I still was in the top 10 of the, you know, of calls,
wow.
But just never, you know, and I saw the difference between the two departments. One where I was mentored and taken in with basically loving arms and taught. And the other one was, oh, I was just another body that walked through the door and could do basic firemanship stuff for 4 years
right. Until
I got hurt. So I think if we treat people that way, no matter the type of department, career combo, whatever, you're not going to get the best, the most and the best out of the new people coming in, because you're not inviting them in. You're not taking them in and saying, welcome to the fold. I know you're new, but we're here to teach you and guide you along the path. It's not always an easy path, but we'll be here for you to help you on that path. Just
that's
like
right.
The military does.
That's right. Absolutely. And that, you know, that's what hit me hard, and it's on my challenge coin. So I have a challenge coin, do your damn job.
That's nice.
But then my big quote on the back is, every kid is owed the opportunity to have a love affair with the job.
I couldn't think of anything more appropriate.
See, and that's where that's just a Jacob Johnson thought at 3 a.m. sitting on the back step of the station, smoking a cigar after a call. I sat here and I was thinking about, you know, what is the purpose of this class? What is the purpose of everything that I've been doing? Why did I come up with this process? And when I really thought about it, it just all came down to, well, every kid's owed the opportunity to love this job. And I thought, no, it needs to be deeper than that. And that's why I said, have a love affair with this job. And it's right, because you're saying you owe them that. And that's exactly it. And man, you and I, we could talk for hours. And it's funny, because I wish I had it all day for you, but I got to go do my taxes later, you know.
Okay.
But I have this, and I think, you know, you just talked about it. They walk in the door. Whether they're a volunteer, whether they're full-time, whether they're part-time firemen, they are owed the opportunity to have a love affair with this job. They have earned their spot in your fire department. And that's the one thing that really rubs me the wrong way, is when those kids walk in and the senior person says, hey, kid, we gave you a job, so you owe us everything. No, the only thing that kid owes you is an open mind and hard work, right? Because they've taken, if let's say they're a career member, they've taken a written test, they've taken a psych exam or a polygraph, they've passed a physical agility, they've passed a panel interview, a fire chief interview, an HR background. I mean, they've gone through 10 or 12 different steps on their own time, unpaid, in order to come into your department and be a member. So they've earned that spot. Now it's up to them to come with an open mind and a lot of hard work, but it's up to you to fill that open mind and to put in the work with them. And to show them how to work and what hard work is and how we do things in the fire service and in your department. If you're a volunteer, like you're saying, you might go through 2 or 3 months of readings, you know, just to get accepted into that department. So if they accepted you, you earned that spot. Now it's up to them to wrap you up, like you were saying, with your two caretakers there in North Carolina, and to teach you and to mold you into what they want to be. And that's even more important in a volunteer department, where you may only get training one time a week,
right,
or maybe 3 times a month, than it is in a career department, where, you know, you can train 3 times a week. And so that training means even more on the volunteer level when you're only getting it once a week. And that's our job as senior members of this job, is to give that opportunity to those kids to absolutely fall in love with it and to become the fireman they want to be.
Very true. Very true. Well, I know you got to run, but I'd love to have you back, because I don't think we've even got knee deep in what you.
Oh, no, I got plenty. I got a whole nother hour, Steve, if you want to go.
Yeah. So I would love to do this, because I think that the message you have, and I've been very lucky to have some of the best leaders in the firehouse. I've had Chief Bobby Halton on. I have the late Chief Alan Brunicini as a guest. Chief Dennis Rubin has been several times. He's coming back. I have Chief Bruce Varner is coming on with Chief Rubin coming in.
Oh, wow.
I have Chief Vance is now interested in coming on to be on. And I've had great leaders, great teachers, but I've not really had anyone who has been as passionate about mentoring really, it, from the leadership position as you and how you've put it, and you've really brought it down, not from the standard of wearing the gold on the collar, but just as another one firefighter to a new firefighter.
Yes,
and I think that's what I've gotten the most out of this morning, is that you're not speaking, when you present this class, you're not speaking because you're a battalion chief. You're speaking because you're a firefighter.
That's right.
What you went through and what you're talking to other firefighters about, it has nothing to do with the gold or the brass on the collar. It's from the heart.
Yes, sir.
And that's the difference.
Big time. 100%. At the end of the day, Steve, when I retire and I walk away, and you know, this is something I tell everybody that walks through the door, I don't want to be known as Jacob Johnson's phenomenal battalion chief, or he was a great company officer. I just want people to say Jacob Johnson was a longtime member and he was an excellent fireman. That's it.
Amen.
Right? Because that's what we are. We still have to know that our job, no matter our title, is still to be a firefighter. Our job is to still protect the citizens and to protect our brothers and sisters and to do what's right in the name of the job. And, you know, a title is a title, but you can never change the heart of a fireman. And that's what I want. That's what I want people to understand, is that I just hope to be known as a good fireman. That's it. Yeah,
that's so true. As we said before we started the show, I was just never became an officer. I was just a snot-nosed, belly-crawling nozzle jockey for my 8 years, but it's still, and an EMT, and worked for EMS in North Carolina. I was lucky enough to be invited to join the county EMS as a fill-in because of the paramedics experience with me running rescue calls from the fire department. And it changed my life. It changed my definition of who I am. And
yes,
that's
sir.
Why today, not even before this. I mean, today I'm doing the podcast. We're in the middle of our getting ready to close off our fifth season. God willing, grants me the good health to come back for a sixth season in August. It's because I want to help other people who are listening to this podcast with using my guests as that message. Value to them, to teach them, help them learn, help them see what their future can be like, learn from people who've been there, and learn from people who are guiding others to be there. And I think you and I share this same passion of, and even though we're from two different generations, we share the same love for the fire service, and we share the same passion for those who say, I want to join the fire service.
That's right.
Be a member. Because if we don't cultivate them, if people don't see that they get a welcome into the fire department or EMS or law enforcement, whichever branch you go into of law enforcement and wherever you are in public service and public safety, if you don't feel welcome when you come in and those first few weeks, those first couple of months, and you're just beat to hell, but you're not learning anything, you're just beat to hell, then you will not get more people in, because those people are going to speak louder in public than those who love the fire service.
Absolutely.
They're going to speak against it.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't want to go to that department. They're terrible there. They're bossy. They don't do anything to help. They just push you around and do you. That's the worst public relations you could ever have for your department.
That's right. Absolutely. 100%. I mean, you nailed it on the head. That's the thing, is that you want to sit here and you want to have the best PR through your best members. And you want to know that people are going to come to your department because you treat people right and you do your job. And I mean, I couldn't say it better myself, Steve. I think you nailed it on that one.
Right.
I think you and I are like-minded, and that's why everything's flowing so good. And we're able to just have regular roundtable talk here as if we were sitting at the fire station right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we're going to come back and sit at this table again next month. I'd like to schedule you once we get off the air. And, but I want to have you back. I want to continue the discussion. I think it's worthy of a second episode. And
absolutely.
And I want to go deeper into some of the stuff that you're teaching.
Absolutely.
From the course, and let our listeners hear that. And again, I'm going to let you know that Jacob is teaching nationally. And how can they reach you? What's the best way to reach you? I'm going to put it on the website too.
Sure. So, I mean, best way to reach me is either through email or phone. I don't mind giving out a personal phone number. It's 713-560-3729. You can call or text me. And my email is jacobjohnson012@gmail.com.
Good. That again, right.
Yeah. So if anybody needs anything, man, I'm more than willing to help out. I'll be at Firehouse Expo in September. If anybody's up there, if they want to come visit and see the class, as well as if you just want me to come out and do a one-day class, I can do that too. So as long as we can make the job better together.
Exactly. That's what we do. Make the job better together. That's what it's all about. My sincere thanks, Chief, for joining us today and giving us a taste of what this mentoring class is all about. And we're going to have the Chief come back next month, and we're going to get into a little bit more of a full dinner and instead of just a taste of this class. That's because it. I think it's so valuable. It's so important today. We're seeing so many things changing in the fire service, even before COVID hit. But since COVID, we've lost a lot of brothers and sisters in the fire service and EMS. We've lost law enforcement officers to COVID as well. We can't forget our brothers and sisters in blue. We have to know that it's our job, those of us who have been in the fire service and are out, but still have a real strong connection, and those like the Chief who are still in and are out there pounding the pavement to teach people about what it takes to be a good firefighter and how to be a good mentor to create those good firefighters when they walk through the door. Not everyone's going to be a great firefighter. We're going to have mediocrity in life. That's what it is. Sometimes you get a great meal. Sometimes you get an okay meal. And sometimes you didn't like it. It all depends on the restaurant, who the cook was that day, right?
That's right.
But we have a passion. Those of us who join public safety, it's a calling. Very few of us say, let's see, I could be a banker. I could be a lawyer. No, I think I want to be a firefighter.
That's right.
Or I want to be a paramedic and help people. Or I want to be law enforcement and protect my community. That's something that comes from the heart. It's not from the brain.
100%. No one forces you to become a public servant.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Chief, again, many thanks. Folks, we hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you're watching the video, you'll see the credits at the end. That'll be the end. If you're listening to the podcast, the audio podcast, we'll be right back once again right after these words. As always, stay tuned. And for those watching the video, thanks for tuning in. We're glad to have you on our YouTube channel. Hope to see you again very soon. Take care. You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust, speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your CISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
Hello, friends. National Volunteer Week is coming up on April 18th through the 24th, and this is a great time to both recognize the volunteers in your departments and recruit new members. The National Volunteer Fire Council is also marking the occasion with a series of initiatives to support the volunteer fire, EMS, and rescue community. Throughout National Volunteer Week, the NVFC will be sending out e-blasts and information highlighting special opportunities available to members of the Volunteer Fire and Emergency Services. Just go to their website, nvfc.org, or makemeafirefighter.org, and you'll get all the information right there. Again, National Volunteer Week coming up April 18th to the 24th. Remember, most of this country is protected by the great men and women who volunteer their services. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for your service, and God bless. In October of 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, we launched our new nonprofit company, Five Alarm Task Force Corp. Our motto is one family, one mission, first responders helping each other. Our goal? To assist our brothers and sisters in dire need. Since then, we have dispersed $1,700 to firefighters and or their families to assist them in their trying times. We are committed to continuing this mission, but to do so, we need your help. So many of you are listening or viewing our podcasts or videocasts, not just in the USA, but around the world. Between Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we have over 5,000 followers and friends. What if 50% of you donated $5? Yes, just $5 to our cause. That would generate nearly $12,000 for our foundation fund. Imagine what we could do with that in helping not only our brother and sister firefighters, but those in EMS and law enforcement. If you are in public safety, you know of what we speak. We love the jobs we do, and we do them to answer the call we receive to be firefighters, paramedics, police officers, etc. But in fulfilling our tasks, we often see tragedy, not only for those we serve, but to those who serve with us. To help, please visit our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org and select Donate from the top menu. You can use a credit card or debit card, a check, or even a cash ACH transfer. From the entire team at 5 Alarm Task Force Corp, thank you. Stay safe and stay well. Hi, this is Steve. Last Monday, April 5th, the ResponderSafety.com website and the CVVFA released a emergency alert bulletin regarding the number of first responders struck in a week. Sadly, there were 9 struck by reports in the past week that involved 11 law enforcement officers and 1 assistant fire chief, resulting in 2 line of duty deaths, several injuries, and of course, damaged emergency vehicles. Now, a year ago, our safety stand down dealt with this very topic. Yet, even in that year, since we really focused on this terrible issue, these accidents have continued and maybe even grown to a point where the numbers are just intolerable for us as those who work in public safety. And that includes fire, rescue, EMS, law enforcement, our recovery operators, tow truck drivers, our road rangers. Just far too many are being injured and killed due to distracted drivers. Most ironic for me, not just from this report, but from what got me interested in this topic, was that in this past year, the Irving, Texas Fire Department, which lost a almost new tiller truck to the same situation, it was used as a blocking vehicle and was hit by a semi, knocked 4 firefighters way off the ground, and it took them almost a year to recover. Well, in this past year, they suffered another hit during taking care of an accident scene of their blocking engine that was placed properly on the highway. And if you read the reports from ResponderSafety.com, and if you haven't, please, it's very important that you go to that website. There are free courses you can take to learn about how to block, how to protect yourself on active roadways during emergencies, etc. But the fact is that everything that we have done so far is not having, pardon the pun, the impact on the public. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we get through to them? Now, a number of the accidents reported in the respondtosafety.com report issued last Monday were due to what they anticipate to be intoxicated drivers, DUIs, but not everyone. Now, we'll never know if we'll be able to stop the DUI driving. I've dealt with it since 77 when I got in the fire service. And here we are in 2021, 40 plus years later, still dealing with it. But distracted driving, our states, our country must take a stronger and louder position to the public to stop this. We can have as many lights, as many controls, and as many blocking apparatus as we want. And yet, if those who drive our highways and byways don't pay attention to what they're doing, then the messages are worthless. We need to have a campaign, a strong national, states together across all borderlines. Doesn't make any difference what political party you're in. This has nothing to do with politics. This has to do with life and safety. That's the only thing of both the citizens, the people who drive, and those in public safety who respond to those emergencies. To get the message out, to tell them, this will no longer be tolerated. This has to be done properly. You have a responsibility when you drive to pay attention. I don't care if there are no kids in the car, three kids in the car, six kids in the car. If you're driving a van, you're driving a compact, a mini, whatever. You have to pay attention to your driving. We did it for drunk driving for the most part. We're doing it for distracted texting and driving. Some states, yes. Some states, no. But this is part of the problem. Texting and driving, infotainment systems, etc. Too much at too fast a time when people are going too fast to control their driving. It's time we take a stand as public safety people. Not branches. Together as public safety people. We are losing too many of our friends, colleagues, and comrades to this type of loss. Too many injuries, too many deaths. It's time to cut them down. Let's work together to do so. And that's my view.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, wish I could do that? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, wish I could do that? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and Five Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson, for discussing the importance of mentoring in the fire service. And he'll be back next month for part two of his discussion. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5alarmtaskforce, on Facebook at /Stephen.S.Green.1, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.